Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
In the first year of peace, more than 2 million couples were married. By 1950, 21 million babies had been born in a seemingly endless baby boom.
I came out of service out of the Navy in 46, and I wanted to go and marry the girl that was writing the 3 letters a week to me for 4 years, and she lived in Floral Park. I had a tavern there, and I moved in with the family. There was a mother and father, her sister and brother, and myself, and a baby coming on after a year.
Despite weeks and months of house hunting, some 3 million married couples throughout the country today are still unable to establish homes of their own.
When you look at the books that you read in school, you read of people in a house. You never read of people living in an apartment, which we did, in trees. It sounds, and it's all new, you know, it was really something that you would like to have.
Guess I don't have to tell you, Mrs. Blandings, what a woman's touch could do to a place like this. Yes, sir. A couple of coats of paint, a little pointing up here and there.
Of course, we wanted our own house, and after, what was it, 2 years? Yeah, two years in furnished rooms. And if you could see some of the dumps we lived in, it was really, remember that attic room in Jamaica? Yuck.
I've got to have a home. No one is to blame, yet everyone is to blame. There's been a lag in home construction for more than 15 years.
In 1945, Americans needed 5 million new low-cost homes, and they needed them right away.
Now there are building materials.
The elusive dream of home ownership would soon be realized by a man about to fulfill a dream of his own and invent a new phenomenon, suburbia.
Bill Leavitt, as a young man working with the Seabees in World War II, has this brilliant idea, taking some of the techniques he's seeing right then and there in World War II, building airstrips, putting up housing for GIs, and bringing them back to America for ordinary people. He's sitting there at night with his pals in the Pacific in World War II and saying, you know, what do you want when you get home? Well, I want a house and a car.
Bill Leavitt's special genius was figuring out how to mass-produce the American dream.
We first came to see that property where they were going to build. It was potato farms, and it stretched like from here to eternity. You would see concrete foundations, nothing but concrete with the heat in. And then down the road there, we were in the midst of all the dust, was a frame job going on. And then down on the dust was where he completed was the sheathing going. And then down the road a bit, and it was like putting your clothes on, from your socks on first, you know, and then putting your underwear on and the shirt, and finally way down on the other end.
It was a finished product.
It was a finished house. And yet, you could see how it grew.
Before the war, the average contractor built 5 houses a year. In Levittown, Long Island, they built 36 houses a day, a grand total of 17,450. Designed for a family of 4, Leavitt's basic Cape Cod sold for a minimum down payment at a price most people could afford.
I think there's a great ad in there. Mr. Veteran, you're a lucky guy. You know, you can buy this house with $100 down. The first day that they were going to sell them, the lines were, people started lining up 72 hours before the houses went on sale. Even Leavitt was stunned.
A second Levittown in Pennsylvania was every bit as successful as the Long Island Levittown. Everyone, it seemed, wanted a Bill Leavitt home.
I beg your pardon, sir. Would you mind telling me who you are and where you're from?
I'm David Poole from Atlantic City, New Jersey.
And would you tell me why you're moving here to Levittown?
Well, I'm working in this area now, and I've looked the houses over, and I think it's a fine place to raise a family, so I've decided to buy one.
Very good, sir.
My house was a little Cape Cod cottage with a trellis over the door and one window on either side, and it was 4 rooms, nice kitchen, an eat-in kitchen, decent-sized living room, 2 small bedrooms, and a bathroom, and it had doors that I could close and open and close and open with. We had always lived in furnished rooms. We had no privacy whatsoever, nothing. It was perfect for a young couple.
And we had a Bendix in the kitchen.
That's right, Bendix washing machine in the kitchen. First time I ever saw a washing machine, I think.
And we fell in love because that washing machine was underneath the stairs, you know. And before that, when we had the baby, you know, it was like 16, 17 diapers a day to wash, boil them on the stove. And needless to say, the family wanted to get rid of us, too. They didn't need a baby that was crying in that, you know, tight quarters, you know, and to have a house of your own, man, that was the way we felt, you know.
After the Depression, all this come on, so it was kind of a gift from heaven, you know, you found these wonderful houses to move in.
And the best thing about it, I guess, was our independence. It was the first time we were away from our parents, completely independent, and we did what we wanted when we wanted. Like any kids, they wanted to be on their own, and we were.
And we could start our family.
That's right. And the rapport between neighbors was, at first, very good. Excellent, in fact.
Because they were all in the same boat as us. They were all first starting out, mostly young like us, and just starting with their family and their first house, too.
The new middle-class families of Levittown had one other thing in common. They were all white.
I walked up to the salesperson, and I said to him,
We're very interested in your house, and we'd like an application. And I remember what he said to me. He looked at me, said, it's not me, but the management has not as yet decided whether he's going to sell these houses to Negroes or not. And,
You can't believe it. You really thought you had it made. You know, everything is falling into place.
Well, I'd like you to conceive that somebody telling you that, and there's no recourse, telling you that openly and outright like that.
Bill Levitt saw himself as a home builder, not as a social engineer, and he refused to sell the blocks. There were court cases against him, and the fact is he was all too typical of what existed in real estate in America in those days, in believing that you did not have to and should not have to sell to people who were not white.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is William Levitt, who heads the largest home building firm in the world.
Bill Levitt would become one of the richest men in America by providing architectural, not racial, equality.
Unlike anything we ever encountered before.
This is one of four models which are now being built throughout Levittown. The four models vary slightly in overall design, but each has the same number of rooms. Two bedrooms.
I think it was that sense that Americans really did like the comfort of having what the other guy had, but yet they could put a little fence around it and say, this is mine. And that's really a particular American genius, is to say, this is yours, this is mine, but we're still all the same.
Did you get all your trees yet? Is this the first one?
An army of Levitt imitators carried the housing revolution across the country.
Thank goodness that's
By 1955, three out of every four houses built were built in Levitt-style subdivisions.
I think Levittown represented to a lot of city dwellers a dream that had eluded them all through the Depression and the war, which was to have a place somewhere with a patch of green in the back where their kids were going to be able to live better than they did. And to that extent, it fulfilled that particular vision. To another whole group of us growing up in cities, Levittown was a surrender. You know, that was exactly what we didn't want to be. To us, going to Levittown would be like going to Attica.
Its critics said that Levittown was little more than a voluntary prison, a multitude of uniform houses lined up at uniform distances on uniform roads in a treeless waste. What the critics said did not matter to the homeowners of Levittown. They had built sturdy new lives in sturdy new houses and wrapped their newborn into the nest. What worried many Americans was not the conformity of their own lives, but communist Russia.
Well, must have hit the wrong button. All right, that was a little bit on Levittown today. Now, we've got a couple of guests calling in the studio, but I think they had to press one. So I can see them on the board. But our feature, as we do every day, we do a highlight of a tiny town. All right. So we're up to, before we get to our guest, we're going to feature, short, Tiny Town number 19, our Tiny Town number 19. And the name of the place is Lost Springs, Wyoming. Lost Springs, Wyoming. And Lost Springs has a population that fluctuates between 4 to 6 people. There might be 4 people there today, might be 6 people by Friday, but 4 to 6 people. Sometimes just one person, you know, depending on the year or the decade. But 4 to 6 people, that's the population. And Lost Springs, Wyoming is 58 acres big. 58 acres big. And it started out as it was a coal mine, and the coal miners needed some accommodations, you know, a place to stay, you know, after work hours. And essentially that's how Lost Springs, Wyoming got started. they have today, they have a post office, they have a general store. That's all in one building, by the way. Post office, general store. They have Bible study there. They have a bar there. And they have a de facto mayor. The town is so small. I mean, with 4 to 6 people, you know, well, who's around the most? That's the mayor. So that's why I said the de facto mayor. They also have a jail there. But the last occupant of the jail was in there, I don't know, maybe well over 10, 12, 15 years ago. It was a dog that bit somebody, so the dog was locked up for 3 or 4 days. And then the last time a person was in there, the jail, the jail looks like the shit. But the jail hasn't occupied a human in, good Lord, you know, I don't know how many, well, 20, maybe 20, 35 years, you know. Anyway, so Lost Springs, Wyoming, and, okay, let's go to, let me read up on Lost Springs, and then we're going to, matter of fact, before I read this, all right, for the guests, if you're listening, because they're going to be talking about a development in Georgia, 307, call into our regular line, 619-768-2945. Call into that number, once again, 619-768-2945. Now, and then for the 309 number, call, if you can, call into the 307 number, and then you'll be conferenced in that way. So 309, call 307, area codes, that is. And then 307, like you did yesterday and before, call into the 619-768-2, you know the number. 619-768-2945, call in that number, and then we should all be connected on the air. Now, hopefully they heard that. Wait a minute. Okay, wait. Robin, let me get through. Because they can hear me on air, other people. Let me get through Lost Springs. Let me get through that first. Okay, Lost Springs, Wyoming. Let me get through this first. And then let's see if we can. Anyway, let me do this first. All right. Lost Springs, Wyoming. As of the 2020 census, they have a population of 6. If you drive by there, the town sign might say population 1, but they say 6. It's on 58 acres. History, Lost Springs was first inhabited in the 1880s when it received its name from a railroad workers who could not find the springs shown on the survey maps of the area. The town was incorporated in 1911. Okay. Hold up, Robin. Let me get through this first, all right? The town was incorporated in 1911. It was originally had 200 residents, most of whom worked at the nearby Rawson coal mine. After the coal mine was closed in 1930, the population of Lost Springs steadily declined. All right, Edward John Salmon of York, Nebraska, and his wife, Glorietta Mae Rogers of Bloomington, Nebraska, moved to Lost Springs, Wyoming in 1948, where they lived and worked in the general store and assisted with the running of the town's post office. Salmon was a member of the American Sunday School Union and Bible Class of Shawnee. The couple had a daughter who died in infancy, Virginia Arlene, and they adopted a daughter, Louise Marie. Salmon and his wife died 17 days apart in 1967. By 1960, the population of the town had dropped to 5 people. In 1976, the state of Wyoming and the U.S. Bicentennial Commission designated Lost Springs as the smallest incorporated town in the United States when its population was then 11. In 1983, Lost Springs became involved in a court battle with the Chicago and Northwestern Transportation Company. The railroad, which ran adjacent to the town, attempted to seize 5.2 acres of the land to build a 22-foot railroad embankment. Lost Springs Mayor Letta Price alleged that the embankment, which would lie in between the town, between the town and U.S. Highway ways 18 and 20, would separate the town from traffic on the highway. A Wyoming district judge ruled in the town's favor, and the railroad ultimately agreed to build an unobstructing track bed and use its own land for track. And there you have it, Lost Springs, Wyoming, our tiny town feature for today. Now, Robin, let me find my studio here, because I'm on the phone here, so I got to maneuver. Okay. Anyway, all right. So, Lost Springs, Wyoming, the economic activity that launched them was coal miners who needed accommodations. All right. So if you can provide accommodations, if that's your thing, you can go find you a patch of land. It doesn't have to be 58 acres as Lost Springs. But, oh, wait a minute. All right, studio. All right. But that's why we're doing these every day, because it's fascinating to see. Like one of the towns that we mentioned yesterday, it wasn't a feature town, out in Washington State, Everett, Washington. That started off with a guy that bought a bunch of acres of land and built a cabin. Anyway, all right, let's go to the phone lines. 309 area code. Your mic is open.
Good morning, L.A.
All right. Good morning.
Back to the show, my friend. I feel like I've been lost. I haven't been in the show talking.
All right. Well, you're here now. You're here now. So let's see. Now, Dr. T, I invited you guys back on today so you can talk about the town project that you guys are launching. I don't see her on the board here, but, of course, she might be somewhere out there. Anyway, but Chris, you can start it off.
Oh, definitely. She found a 41-acre piece of property that they were already doing wedding events.
Hello.
And party venues. So, of course, we know the neighbors ain't got a problem with people out there doing things. And it has 5 beautiful homes on it. But it's a beautiful property already. And I think that, you know, the one thing I've been talking about, and I didn't hear yesterday in the show because I was in and out, but I was wondering if she talked about, you know, us putting on music events and art shows and stuff like that to bring awareness and to fundraise so we can continue. So, like, to buy the town in North Carolina that
right.
That we had talked about one day, you know, $1.4 million, we ready to talk because that town has everything in it to give people a purpose. And that to me, we ought to be able to raise $1.4 million in a couple of days with some major acts doing shows. So I've been working on that. And, you know, my PR person, you know, you've met her, Saba, and, you know, a few other ones. And everybody's interested in this thing. And right now she gets to go look at the property tomorrow. So
all right, now the property for 41 acres, and if I don't see her on the board. Oh, yeah, she's on the board. Let me open up.
She's on the board now.
All right, Dr. T, your mic is open. Robin, your mic is open too.
Okay.
It's got five houses on it already, you said?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is Dr. T. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
There are five houses on it currently. It has been a wedding venue, so there's actually a structure that easily transforms into a school to be able to educate the individuals that come onto the property, and then another structure that's unfinished as well on the property in a large barn.
Okay, so you got, it's 41 acres, it's located in Georgia, it's got five buildings, one of the buildings is a barn. Are any of those places occupied at the moment?
No, there's five homes.
Good. Right.
With an additional barn.
Oh, okay.
And
six
an
buildings.
Additional large building that provided the wedding service and the reception with additional bedroom and kitchen in that building as well.
All right. Okay. So you got the infrastructure there already. So now,
yes.
All right, 41 acres. So now, I guess you're at the fundraising stage of it or what?
Yes, we are. I'm going tomorrow to do a video walkthrough of the property, and we are at the fundraising stages, and we already have a waiting list for residents to come onto the property, so the homes will be filled quite quickly. With an additional homes that Chris builds, is going to be necessary to build another 100 homes at least on that property.
Ooh, okay, that's a major project. Okay. But it's still just 41 acres.
Yeah,
it's 41 acres. That's a lot bigger than most. Well, you got a good project there. Got a good project. Now, how far is it from, let's say, what's the nearest big town that people, you know, most people know about that live in the United States, like Atlanta, Augusta, places like that?
It's about probably an hour south of Atlanta.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you'll be able to sell that place out quick then. That's in a good location. Because people, because you can live there.
2.5 hours from Jacksonville. About 2.5 hours
Florida,
from Jacksonville.
Okay.
Another 2.5 from Tallahassee. What's that?
Okay, Tallahassee. Okay, Florida. Hold on. You said how far? All right, 75. All right, because you can take 75 from, Georgia. That comes from Florida and hit I-10 and get to Jacksonville. Okay, so it sounds like a pretty good location. Now you have a waiting list already?
Yes, we have individuals that need housing, so there should we will have the homes filled very quickly.
Okay, good. Let's see. What's the name of the community that you're founding?
Chris, you want to answer that?
Well, I think we could just, we'll call it Hope, Georgia. Because it's a Hope. She has her 501c3 charity is got Hope in the name. And what we're going to do is just come together here and support her charity. That's what it's about here, is to give hope. And we're going to honor all the people that are there. So I think Hope in some way needs to be in the name of it, because if nothing else, you know, to me, that's where it all starts, giving somebody an idea.
Absolutely.
That they have something. And they're going to have more than they've ever dreamed.
Okay.
They ever could.
And that's our mission.
All right, well, that property is big enough. Well, that property is big enough, 41 acres. That's big enough to be called Hope, and you can even put a village within that, what you're doing there. So you got that's right now. For people that are interested in that want to be a part of, well, I guess depends on which way they want to become a member of the community. So you can, people that want to live there, or what about people who have a business that might want to set up a lemonade stand there or something like that, you know, donut shop, what have you.
Well, I think that would be
What is a different
key.
Opportunity?
That's the one thing that's key, is what you teach is social equity, earth wealth, and anyone can create a business from home. And we want to support that. That's why I was thinking of doing these craft shows, doing these initiatives, but also bringing awareness. Because you can come out and sell your product, make money, but at the same time, it's raising money. It's raising money with a purpose, for a reason, to do what we're doing. So I support everybody that's been listening and anybody that's got a business. But if they want to do something and show their stuff and that, we would welcome you, because you're there for a reason. You're there to – that's our artist for a cause, you know. Those, when those artists show up and
now,
showing all that art, it's for a reason. Right. Good, bro.
Now, the barn that you have there, what are you going to use that for?
At this time, it has the landscaping equipment, tractors, riding lawnmowers, and whatnot. But we have a structure that's 4,500 square feet that's unfinished.
Mm-hmm.
And our hope is, because culinary arts is a huge part of our independent living skills program, as well as retail. So I, you know, personally would love to turn that structure into a cafe type, you know, retail business.
Right. Well, it sounds like, yeah, you got a lot of potential there. You're not going from scratch. So, I imagine with the buildings that you have there already, Wi-Fi would be no problem there. I'm just suspecting.
Yeah, there's already Wi-Fi. There's already, you know, electrical, sewer, plumbing. All of that is already on the property.
Okay. All right. Now, have you guys put out a if a person wanted to be a part, I mean, what's the, like, if they wanted to buy, let's get a house, have Chris build a house, or, oh, let's take a vendor, somebody who has a vendor, like a flea market type of business, okay, and they wanted to set up something in Hope, Georgia. What would be the, I guess, initiation fee, for lack of a better term, or membership fee, whatever you want to call it, or vendor fee?
to live on the property or just to be a vendor from the property?
Give me a price for both of them.
Well, it depends, and let me tell you why it depends. Because the purpose of this, of course, as you know, is to bring hope and healing to underserved and underrepresented populations who are coming through a period of crisis or need additional support in order to live their best life, if you will. So there is a opportunity to do a membership where they commit to empowering the youth or the younger people that are coming through there as mentors, as well as businesses that bring the residents in to learn a trade. So if they commit to empowering the residents, that's a different cost than just living on the property and, you know, being a business on the property.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Trying to get back to my phone. Yeah. All right. So it's a membership, and they are, that's one of the fundamental communities that does exist throughout the United States. You know, you have municipal towns, unincorporated places, private towns, closed towns, homesteads. So you have a variety. 773, your mic is open. 773.
How are you?
Fine, fine. Good to hear you.
Good, good, good. So, yeah, I really, really like the fact that people's hearts are opening up to being able to open up to the idea of helping the masses. And once again, I do say, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink it. So I believe getting the word out, people move by, it's almost like a monkey see, monkey do. People move by crowd. They're like, okay, if it's popular, they'll do it, you know. My focus, of course, is, you know, with the Black Youth Metropolis and the Inner City Youth Foundation is to empower youth to be accountable to communities. So I do like what I hear. I appreciate what you're doing. And I actually just tuned in. So I had some calls earlier. But that's really a wonderful thing that you're doing.
There it is. What they're doing something very, very, and what they're doing is where I believe the ball is going. Matter of fact, Reba, we do us every day now. We're up to 19. We do a feature, a quick little feature on tiny towns. So today, our 19th tiny town feature was we featured Lost Springs, Wyoming. Lost Springs, Wyoming. And on our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV, DIY Housing TV, or It's My House, click on any one of those, you'll get it. I've got like three videos of, so you get a visual of Lost Springs, Wyoming, which has a fluctuating population these days of anywhere from 4 to 6 people. And it started off by offering accommodations to coal miners. So that's the simple way that they started. Today, Lost Springs, Wyoming has a post office. This is all housed in one building now. So within that one building, they have a post office, the general store, sort of like, you know, on the TV show Green Acres or Petticoat Junction, Sam Drucker store. Okay, so that's real. As a matter of fact, let's see, they have a Bible study. They have a Bible study there, and they have a bar there as well. All right, so, of course, one of those 4 to 6 people is the mayor. the mayor of Law Springs, Wyoming. All right. Now, yesterday, we also, it wasn't a feature town, but we took a look at Everett, Washington, not too far from Seattle, Washington. And it was a guy, I mean, God, this is over 100 years ago. The guy went from Massachusetts to clear across the country to what we now call Everett, Washington. He bought a 600-acre plot of land, and he named it Everett, Washington. But he, and probably even before he named it, this guy just had 600 acres, and he built a cabin, and he lived in it by himself. And then I imagine somewhere along, I mean, so you have a lot of these little towns, because like I said, whether it's New York City or Lost Springs, Wyoming, everything typically starts with one to two people, typically. You know, Seattle, Washington, as we went over that town yesterday, how it started with essentially 10 or 11 adults, and well, no, no, yeah, 10 or 11 adults and about 12 children. And, you know, they, before they built houses, more than likely, a lot of these towns, like this guy that started Everett, Washington, with tents. You know, we had a, there's another town that we featured in Georgia earlier this year, the Freedom Georgia Initiative. But the town that they're doing is Freedom Georgia, and they started out with 19 families buying 97 acres of land. They're up to 502 the last I checked. But they started with just giving weekend tours. I guess maybe they did some things during the week, but weekend tours of the 97 acres so people can get a visual, in-person visual, and then they did campouts. So they bought their tents, and they camped out, and that's how they raised the money, you know, to get that going. So each day we feature a new town. So today, and they'll be on every week, Hope, Georgia, that's the running name, and it's 41 acres. It's about an hour outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And it's got, I believe they said five houses, but they have other buildings on there, including a barn, because you can do a whole lot. I mean, it's limited to your imagination what you can do with a barn. I mean, it can be multi-purpose. So, Chris or Dr. T, any, now how can people get in touch with you if they are interested in becoming members of the Hope, Georgia village or town that you guys are in the process of organizing?
Well, I was going to say, you know, they can reach out through the phone. And my phone number is 309-6319. You can go to my website, hopeforhousing.org, and reach out that direction. That number will take text messages as well. As you'll see, that's my phone number that's on the website. I won't bring you to a secretary or nobody else until after you speak to me, because I want everybody to get the same message. So that's the way I do things. Now, Dr. T, go ahead and give them your information, your website.
So the website is newhopeadvocacy.org, and they can reach me at newhopeadvocytda@gmail.com.
Good, good. And what about, you have rooms on Clubhouse as well?
Yes, sir. We're going to be doing a PIC TV broadcast as well as we continue to grow. There is an opportunity if you have an elder person looking for housing that wants to remain in their own home with the services and supports that they currently get in a residential facility. there's an application process for that, because we have a waiting list as well. So we have application process for elderly, for homeless, and for youth for the residential treatment academy. So those are all areas that you can should be able to go to the website and click on the link and put in your information there.
Good. And what I like about what you guys, the community that you're organizing here, you're creating communities, villages, townships, whatever you want to call them, that are not meeting the needs of, like, for instance, you'll be able to get things in Hope, Georgia, that you probably will not get in, what do you call it, Atlanta, Georgia. Or at least I'd rather live in that, you know, I haven't even seen any pictures yet. I'd rather live in Hope, Georgia, than Atlanta, Georgia. Because Atlanta is, particularly with a city of its size, is very political. And you've got to have some money to get political influence in that place. So the small towns like you guys are organizing, I believe that's where the ball is going. And because you do have people that are moving, and really a lot of these larger cities like Atlanta, Washington D.C., Chicago, Illinois, Los Angeles, California, definitely Seattle, Washington, those places, day by day, are becoming places for the wealthy. And there's a rat race element to it because you have people, I mean, I know people that live in those cities that make a six-figure income, but they're living in a room because they can't afford an apartment or even a studio apartment. So with a place like Hope, Georgia, you know, you can live a sustainable lifestyle and probably save some money out of each and every paycheck and have a savings account. So, Chris, what are the homes going to run for? Let me ask this question. What will be, and I think you already named one of the activities, the economic engine or engines of your town? Like, because one of the towns I featured a couple of weeks ago in South Dakota on a lake, there, the economic activity that got that town started was a husband and wife team making and selling hamburgers. Not franchise hamburgers from McDonald's or Wendy's, just good old-fashioned hamburgers. Lobo, Texas, which we featured last Friday, the economic engine for them starting off was water. It was a watering hole, literally. So what would be like the economic engines that you guys plan on having there?
Okay. One would be the culinary arts. And that would be a food. So we have a cafe. We have something that the community don't have that's there now. So we could have a restaurant that we could probably do fine dining in that barn's not like any typical barn that you would think of. I want you to think of beauty because it's already there. It's just not finished. It is huge. But it is almost finished. It's not the bare bones. So what we have is a big, beautiful banquet hall that's going to be turned into, one, learning how to cook. And we're also going to grow food, so we will have food production. So we'll have the stand out there at the road where people can come in off there and get fresh food. So that income will be coming in. And also the purpose of somebody working with that and, you know, giving them something to do. The whole thing is people have purpose and they don't know it, and we want them to find what they enjoy. So we want to be able to have multiple different streams of income. One will be housing our veterans, and we're working through a national organization to do that. But by working with them, it gives us a little bit of financial freedom.
Right.
And you know, that giving us a little extra to work with over top of what it cost us to be sustainable. We not only want to sustain ourselves, we want to be able to grow. We want to move on and on and on and on and on. So the people that come there ain't necessarily saying you're coming there to live there forever. You're coming there to begin what your life forever is going to be and where it's going to be. And we don't know. You know,
you know, this place is the Hope, Georgia. That, it, you know, I see a vision of it. It might become a trendy place to go. And here's because of some of the things you were named as the economic engines. You're growing some of your food. I mean, you're teaching people how to cook. You're growing your food organically. And I thought about Whole Foods because at Whole Foods, you know, it comes in from different places or whatever. You know, probably most of it's locally grown. But I can see at your place, a person can come there and pick what they, you know, like among some of the vegetables. And then it's prepared there, and then they can eat it there at a sit, you know, a sit-down place. And, I think that idea alone can catch on, you know, big time.
Well, yeah, that would be that's true farm to table. So if you came in and you picked the fish you wanted to eat, you picked the fish you wanted to eat out of our aquaponic system. Then it gets prepared any way that you want it paired. We show you the multiple ways that you can prepare it. And we can even actually bring them in and cook it. You know, there's a steakhouse in this town where I live, and it's called Alexander Steakhouse. And you can either cook your steak or they'll cook it for you.
Man, now I like that idea. I like that innovation. I like that innovation.
You know,
you'll be able to do that where in Hope, Georgia. Yeah, you'll be able to do things that they're not going to do in Atlanta, or many other.
Well, they can do it in Atlanta. It's just after they find out that they can do it in Atlanta. We the whole thing is educating people. You know, that's why you've been doing this show for 9 years, right? Is you've been educating people, and you've been educating me for the past 9 months. So, you know, I appreciate you more than you can probably imagine.
With this whole concept of tiny towns, Chris, we're and you know what? The goal that we have by the end of the year to do 100 in a day is I figure if we set up communities, you know, that's why I feature a new town every day. You know, you form the town and then the housing part will follow right up in there. So, I heavy concentration on a daily basis. Like, we got a guy calling in this week who's set up military bases in Europe as well as Asia. So he's going to be educating us on how we can actually set up a community, a village, within 24 hours. So I don't know if he's going to be in tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, because what's today, Tuesday? I don't know if he's going to be in between, hopefully this week, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, at least one of those days he'll be on. I'll let people know. And but he'll show us how the military does it, how you can just set up, like if you wanted to set up Hope, Georgia in 24 hours, just the basics of it. He'll show, which is taking a page out of the Bill Levitt thing, because Bill Levitt he learned what he did being in the Navy, the Seabees, which was the construction battalion. So, and that's how he, because it was just he, his brother, and his dad. That was the Levitt real estate company. And they were building 30 to 40 houses a day. All right, so imagine if you can do 10, 20, Hope, Georgia, Hope, Wyoming, Hope, Washington. So yeah, we're going to really hit, you know, because if we concentrate on a community, that brings everybody in. That brings in the tiny houses and all these other ideas that we talk about. And it also gives, I like the name of your town, Hope, Georgia, because it gets it takes away all the excuses. It takes away all excuses that, okay, if they can do it, you can do it too, and you can be a part of it and learn. So that's a real good name you guys have and whatnot. Have you told Carlos about it yet?
Carlos does know about it. He does know about it. And, you know, of course, I'm working with Maria, our architect, you know, to where we can – they've already got some designs that we've already laid out for some communities that already have the greenhouse in the middle with the houses around it. And the greenhouse is not only the greenhouse, but it has a cooking situation in it. And it can feed the entire community in, you know, in a family sit-down situation. So, definitely got a lot of ideas.
The thing about that you guys have is because between Atlanta and, you know, Hope, the community that you guys are organizing, there's a whole bunch of feeder towns that are there. So you don't have to have a Walmart in Hope, Georgia. Between Hope and Atlanta, there's the Walmart. There's everything that you won't get in Hope between those two towns. But then there are things that will be available in Hope that you can't get in any of those other towns. So it's a good project that you guys have going on. So keep us posted on that. And people like to you got their contact information if you're interested on that. And like I said, we'll be featuring other projects like this, like our little village that, you know, it's just 4 acres, and that's within. We call Earth Wealth Forest. And there's no hard definition of a forest other than about 8 or 9, 8.5, and trees that are what, 16 feet tall, 8 to 16 feet tall. So we've got that. And we call it Earth Wealth because there's a bunch of Earth Wealth there in a form of underground water, sunlight, because I measure wealth by natural resources. I don't measure it by dollars and cents. I measure it by natural resources. Now, those natural resources can be converted into dollars. Like with, matter of fact, let's do this right now with Hope, okay. In an acre is made up of 43,560 square feet. All right, now times 41 acres, so bare minimum, there's 1,785,000 960 square feet of land at Hope, Georgia, that Dr. T and Chris Collins are talking about. Now, let's take a look at the natural resources. All right, an acre, and let's see, it's all right. Let's see. Okay, 1 acre of land has 32,585 gallons. All right, so um, 41 acres times, I'm going to narrow this down, the 32, oh, I have to, let's see, 32,000, I said 858, all right, you know what, hold it. 32,000, I'm going to say just 320,000, okay. So, a gallon, I narrowed it out, I went down on this one. 320,000 gallons of water is in 1 acre of land. Well, it's more than that. I'm just going, I forgot what the last three digits were. So sitting under those houses, if you walk every square foot of that, okay, you've got 13,320,000, they have over, let me put that out there right now, there's over 13,120,000 gallons of water below the surface of Hope, Georgia. They never, ever need to buy bottled water again. Nobody lives in that community. Now, they could, as the economic engine, put in the well, and Chris and Dr. Scott on pieces of water. This world people that we're talking about. But then they can put in a well and they can sell Hope water, Hope H2O, whatever name you want to come up with. Okay. And that's the economic engine. Because instead of buying Evian and Fiji water and Perrier and all this other stuff, that's part of their wealth. That's what I call earth wealth. It's sitting right there. Over 13 million gallons of water. Nobody can steal it. So they have that economic engine. And see, that's why I measure wealth by natural resources. Now, another natural resource that they have there is sunlight. You know, because they, put some solar panels throughout the community. They don't have to, they have more than enough land where they can have their own utility company just for that community with that 41 acres of land. So anyway, and that's more earth wealth, but and there's got to be at least 8 other natural resources that I haven't even named. So here's a homework assignment for people that might be in Hope, Georgia. Think about 8 to 10 other natural resources that are there that can be tapped into. And in a lot of cases, it's things that people just – they never thought, they just take for granted. Like I said, there's over 13 million gallons of groundwater sitting on that land below the surface.
And isn't that just one foot of water?
I don't know how deep yet. So, I don't know, Chris, how long it is, but it's there. I don't know how deep you got to dig to get it, but it's there.
No, not digging to get it. It's the point that there's a water table there, and that water table is more than likely about 40 or 50 feet.
Yeah, right. I don't know what the water table is, but
right. So that was the one. But now, when it rains,
yeah, and when it rains, okay, it's going to be another 13 million gallons that's going to fall on the grounds. Now you can harness the rain, rainwater catchments. They got YouTube videos on that. But there's a lot of wealth there already. That's what I call play. You know, that's what I call earth wealth. But so it's due to the fact that well, like I said, I'm preaching to the choir. You guys know it. There's a lot there that you can harness and tap. So, 41 acres is significant.
Yes, and we're going to do at least 5 acres of a veterans community, and they will be building steel frame homes for homeless vets all over the country, and they will be shipped out of there. So, Hope, Georgia is going to bring unity to a community, and it's going to give an equal opportunity. So it's time for us to get a grasp, you know, and I think when the veterans figure out that we're trying to build them something, you know, they're gonna really want to interact with us. And, you know, I'm asking not for just the veterans that have already served, but the ones that enlisted that are serving. They need to know when they get out there that they're about to go through the most traumatic thing they're ever going to go through in life, and that's the transition from military to civilian, because they're going to lose all the support that they had. But we don't want them to. We want them to keep that support. We want them to stay together. We want them to work together. We want them to work with the community. That, you know, that's how we're going to open up people's eyes. And, you know, I got a phone call the other day from my, you know, a company that I'm affiliated with over in Bali. And they already have 15 units that are available, you know, for people to come and visit or move. But they want to do a retirement community, and they sent me the rendering of it. It's gorgeous. And it's got a $3 million price tag. But what it is people can retire in paradise and live further than you're living here in the United States, but live in beauty and serenity. And, you know, to me, when they called me and told me about it, I did share it with Dr. T. You know, these people, they're very intentional, but they have another product. Now, they utilize recycled plastic, styrofoam, and fiberglass. And okay. they build a structure, a shell. And they also use bamboo. So everything they're using is green and sustainable, but it also lasts a very long time, and it has a very high R value. But they can also utilize our framing with their system and give so many more options, and that, you know, going so much higher and everything else. So, you know, there's options out there for everything. And what we're trying to do by just doing this community is trying to do we're trying that ignition and see if we can to ignite that fire in your heart that water won't put out. And that's just to know that we do care about you, even though we don't even know about you yet. So, yeah, that's what this is about, right? It's about creating
Chris,
community.
Area code 204, if you're listening, press 1. And let's see if you pop up on the board. I don't see. I think it's 2. Whatever area code that you mentioned, I don't see them on the board yet. But if you want to participate in the conversation, just press 1. And then we can see your hand go up and go from there. Yeah, well, Hope, Georgia, man, that's, I imagine, 240, press 1, and then I can't see on your board unless you press 1. I imagine you'll probably have, after this one, other people that will want to start that type of community in their neck of the woods as well. So...
Well, I think one beautiful thing about this is, you know, what we talked about this weekend. You know, we've been talking on this podcast. You've been doing it for over 9 years, and one thing about
but, but you know, Chris, I haven't, but what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
I I said that, that, you know, so I'm saying from here on out, man, we're talking about, you know, at least putting together one, organizing at least one town a month, bare minimum. If we get enough people involved, we can actually set up 10 to 20 houses, I mean, towns a month. It doesn't just need a, you need a dedicated boots on the ground person. It's one. And then you work from there.
That's right.
And I think that's what we're working for, LA, is especially with the learning and vocational entrepreneurial program for youth and for people that want to find that hope in life, right? And this first property that we're getting ready to launch is only the first. And our intent is to have a community of hope in every, at least every state, but certainly in every community that we can find that allows us to put a community like this in that area for individuals to, A, help youth exiting foster care, help our individuals with disabilities, our elderly, our homeless, and our vets.
That's a huge market.
I hope that everybody else got to hear you. You were, it was coming in like you didn't have a good signal to me, but I didn't know if it was my signal or not.
I didn't hear a thing. It was very,
very garbled.
Matrix.
Yeah. You're in the matrix there, LA. But yes, I think what you were saying is every community can have this. It's just whether or not they get educated to know this. And that's what we're trying to do. And as soon as you get some signal there, then you're ready to talk. Go ahead and jump in.
Oh, yeah. I got booted. But that happens here on a Blog Talk occasionally. Particularly after you get that first one. Well, like I said, with the Freedom Georgia Initiative, and I had that show archived here on Blog Talk. They gave us about 90 minutes, started with three women, three black women out of Atlanta, metro Atlanta. And they just did, I don't know, the only question that they didn't answer, and I knew they weren't going to answer it before I even asked it, because I wouldn't have answered it, is, you know, initial price they got it for, because I know they got it on the super cheap. They did tours. They drove people from Atlanta or metro Atlanta. It's like 4 hours away outside of Atlanta. And they just took people to see it and walk the land. And initially they said, well, look, you talk to 10 friends, 10 friends, let's see, or what was it, 30 friends? You know, 30 people each. And out of that 30 people each, that's what, 90 people, they got 19 families to pony up, and that's how they got the initial 97 acres of land. And just by doing tours, and they were just going out there to see raw land with trees and bushes, grass on it, no buildings at all. But people caught the vision by actually going there through those little, because that's, you know, 2 hours there, 2 hours that, and then you got, let's say you spend 2 hours. That's a day trip. All right. So I imagine they did that on weekdays, I mean weekends mostly. And then they started doing campouts. And if you go online and type in Freedom Georgia Initiative, and then take a look at their pictures, or go on what do you call it, YouTube, and put in Freedom Georgia. You see some videos there, and they had, I mean, really Walmart tents. You know, they camped out, you know, for the weekend, and you know they're bonding and everything, and from that, they were able to get other people interested. And they got up to 502 acres last time I spoke to them, right here on this podcast. So, Pope Georgia, what? Because I know another group of people, 12 of them out of Philadelphia, they bought 110 acres in Georgia, Sparta, Georgia. And I got to get them on it. But, Hope Georgia's infrastructure-wise is starting out with more than, although it's 41 acres, but it's 41 acres, which it has some infrastructure and buildings on it already, that they don't have to worry about coming out of pocket for that. So it's a sound project that you're going. And that's the world we're taking from here on out, basically. If you're interested in starting a town or a village or a hamlet or a homestead, that we're putting out on how you can do that, and within that you can meet people like, if you want to learn how to build a house, tiny or otherwise, you know, you got people like Chris Collins. So people that might be homeless, you're looking to start over, or you're looking to reduce your expenses, or live with low expenses or even debt free. Listen to people like Chris or Dr. T or any other guests we'll have, like, say, later this week. I don't know if he'll be on tomorrow, but before then, between tomorrow and Friday, we're going to have a guy he was in the military, and he's going to show us how you can use military techniques to set up your village or small town within 24 hours. All right, from scratch. Now it won't have everything, but the basics will be in place within 24 hours. So he's going to talk about that sometime this week. I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow, Thursday, or Friday, but we'll have him in talking about that. Now, speaking of which, Speed, Chris, now tell us about. One of the things that you guys will be doing is you'll be building buildings. Tell us about the machine that you have and what that can do.
Yeah, the machine makes building material, and it makes all the studs, all the trusses, and all the track. The track is your top and your bottom plate. So all you do is put your stud into each one of them, put your screw in, and the wall will go together. The material will not burn, won't absorb water, stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable, build it without a dumpster, build it cheaper than wood, and get a 60% discount on insurance versus a wooden structure. And it exceeds all residential codes in the U.S. and internationally. And I also partnered with a company. Now, these machines make 2 feet of material per second. So I got 15 of those machines online, and 4 more is coming online. And they're spread out across the country, but there is one factory there in Orlando. There's one in Georgia. It's in Woodstock, Georgia. One in right outside Lafayette, Louisiana, and one in Houston, and one in San Antonio. I think it's San Antonio. Oh, it's, yeah, San Antonio, Texas. I was thinking Austin. San Antonio, Texas. And right now there's 2 machines in Phoenix, but they are leaving. But I partnered with a company, and it's a 60-year-old company called Western Forms. And in the past 10 years, they've built 1 million homes. Now they did. They've got 35 patents on their concrete forms, but they still didn't have the roof system, and they didn't really have the interior wall system. But they did a city last year in Mexico with 50,000 homes in it. Now, what we're talking about now, they were looking at scaling to build 3 million of these over the next 7 years. When they met me, they realized that they've already done up till last month. I haven't had the updated for what this month is, but as of May, they had done 600,000 foundations this year. So what they're looking to do is, instead of building all of the walls and taking their time and doing that, we can produce the walls and the trusses much faster. So if they just concentrated and took their four walls or five walls, six walls that they wind up building a home with and turn that into a foundation, now they can produce five times the foundations that they would normally be building on homes. So when they looked at that, they looked at they could scale their business because they're only in three countries. They're in the U.S., they're in Mexico, and they're in India. But they're working in 57 countries. Came to me with is they would like to do 30 million homes over the next 7 years worldwide. And with them,
I like those. This
comes into, you know, now we really need people to be educated. And that's one reason I had asked you earlier this weekend about what we're talking about and what we could see. And if we take this podcast and make it a broadcast. So that was one of the guy I was trying to see if he was online and listening was the president of the TV network. But I wanted to talk about DIY Housing TV because I want this all to be filmed. You know, everything that we're doing on that land in Georgia, it needs to be videoed. People need to see what they can come out and be, right, what they can come be part of, what you can do in your own city. But it's just you taking the initiative of doing it. We need you to see what we're talking about and not us just talking and people not having the visuals. Because not everybody
most
has sight.
The people that are, at least that's me, you, Robin's in there somewhere, architects can see the invisible. But most people are not architects. Most people are bricklayers. They have to have a visual. So, yeah, the visual part is very important because, matter of fact, if the military guy, if he's not available tomorrow, we're going to talk about I was thinking about two business models as you were speaking about Hope, Georgia, and that's Dollar General. Dollar General opens up a new store every 24 hours. There's a Dollar General open. And Toyota, which is probably the most prolific car manufacturer on the planet, and it's a family business. A lot of people don't know that. But Toyota manufactures 29 cars per minute. And on average, the average Toyota car and or truck has around 30,000 parts, give or take whatever model that you're dealing with. So with the machine that you're talking about, Hope, Georgia can probably, you know, like say, Dollar General, you know, nothing fancy, nothing sexy about it. It's basic bread and butter, but I think they do one a day. I think they open up one. Let me look that up real quick. I think they one day.
And one thing I know about
Georgia.
What you
guys are talking about.
They got Dollar Generals everywhere,
right
there. So they would be all for
right
it because every community there has one.
Let me see. Dollar General. Yeah, I got a Dollar General app on my phone. Let's see. Dollar General. how often, let's see, how often, all right, new store. Okay. All right, since 2012, the discounter, which is Dollar General, has opened roughly a few stores a year. Okay, a pace that the Goodlettsville, Tennessee retail said it intends to keep in 2023. Let's see, they've got 19,000 stores. All right, so we build Monday, you know, 1,795 stores. Let's see. They relocated 127. I got a screenshot, this stuff. Okay, so let's do the arithmetic on this. All right, 1,000 stores divided by 365 days a year. So I stand corrected. On average, they open up 2.7 Dollar Generals a day. Okay, so food for thought. Food for thought. That matches up with your numbers, Chris. Okay, did I boot myself out again? Wait a minute. Yeah, I think I did. Wait a minute. Oh, no, I'm still connected. Okay. I got to find my studio next. Okay. Well, Chris, anybody there?
Yes, sir.
All right.
I'm here.
Well, it's 8 after 12. Oh, great. Yeah, so you heard that, Chris. Dollars, they average 2.7 new Dollar Generals per day.
Yeah, I was doing the math in my head. I had 2.65, and you said 2.7. So the two guys that were sitting here is like,
oh, well, same. Yeah.
It's same.
They definitely open up two a day. And they put the finishing touches on the third one the next day.
Yep.
So they open up a solid two a day. Okay. So, yeah, so if the military guy, which is Brother Beasley, if he's not in tomorrow, to educate us on the, you know, military cell setups, we're going to look at Dollar General, and we're going to look at Toyota as well. But what I like about the Dollar General, because most of us, if not all of us, have been in a Dollar General. And, you know, they have it all laid out and everything. Because we can easily, you know what, even if we did one, you know what, even one a month, one new village a month, you know, you'll make out well. You'll make out well. Actually, the key is you got to get solid on the ground people, at least one. And then you know, you can go from there. So, anyway, Chris, any other comments?
No, it sounds. I got excited about let's do. I heard you make a comment. Let's do a village, you know, a month. And if we did that, you know, most definitely that would start to multiply because people are going to start to pay attention. And as they're listening, you know, it's one thing about listening and paying attention. It's two different things, but paying attention is free. So if we can give them the site, we can let them see, I think it won't be a problem at all. And I think we really can achieve doing one village a month, especially, you know, when you're talking about the community up in 24 hours.
Well, one venture a month, and then, you know, still have our own, you know, projects as well. But, yeah. Matter of fact, we'll throw that out there this week, too. Matter of fact, I can mix it in tomorrow. Like, say, if Beasley is not available tomorrow, because he's going to tell us to educate us on how to set up things using military techniques. Like I said, we're going to take a page out of Dollar General and just look at the fundamentals of what's got to happen and go from there. And then also let people know that Hope, Georgia, opportunities are that are already in motion.
Correct.
So, okay, I'm trying to work my way through. There was one piece of motivation I didn't play this morning. Minutes. And then we can use Clubhouse also to promote that as well.
Yes, we can.
I
want to say hello to Robin. If she's on the show, I'd love to say hi to her. I've never been on the show with her. So, you know, and I heard her voice earlier.
Let me open up her mic. She produces the show. Rob, are you there? All right, she's off doing something. She's recording the show, though.
Yeah, no, she's been behind the scenes here, and I just had never heard her voice, and I heard her shortly earlier. Is that her?
Yeah. Sometimes, like, depends on what time of year, she'll be on the way. She was on this show earlier.
I think you're losing signal again there, brother.
Send her a text message. Let's see. Chris wants to skip it. All right. Let's see if she picks that up. But her mic is off. And you know what? With the network that you have, man, one a month, and you know what? It'll probably be, you know what? I'm thinking, going back to when you and Carlos started out, that was like the last quarter of last year, like last November, December, you guys went like virtually every day. If we were thinking like we're thinking now, setting up a village, the money would have been raised what Carlos needed for his project. That's my belief.
Oh, I don't doubt it one bit. And the thing is, you know, we've been talking about it.
We weren't thinking big at the time. But, yeah, the thinking that we have out there now, that will do it.
And that's the one thing about it. We're doing it. We're doing something that, you know, we were talking about. And that's the key ingredient in everything that I've seen in the past 18 years even trying to do this was it was if an idea happened, I needed to go do it regardless what it cost me, what it was. I needed to go do it because I needed to experience it. I needed to show people that was there what they could do, what they are doing, you know. And, you know, I've seen some miracles. And I've also known that now miracles happen when disasters happen because people are educated. And, you know, that's what I appreciate about you educating people on different ways of Earth work. Right? And,
man, I got to write that one down. Wait, let me go to my... You said miracles happen when disasters happen?
Yes. Because
I'm writing that one in my notes.
What happened when here's the example and the period behind it with the exclamation point above it. And that is I showed 25 people how to get a home and just ask them to go do it for me. Show 25 people what I just showed them. I said, I didn't even tell them my name. You know, I showed up in a van that was in somebody else's name. But by putting that infection with a probiotic into the mix, you know, they gutted 17,000 homes in 60 days. They would show up by tens of thousands and knock out city blocks during their lunch break and go back to work. But it's paying it forward. But I saw Tennessee step up and become the volunteer state. They say it, and I'll tell you what, they live it. Because right now, they're living in a beautiful city in Nashville that was underwater. And you can't tell that it was ever underwater. Nothing there was ever underwater. Go look. Now, go back to Katrina. Just 4 years prior, and look at it. It's still destroyed. So I've seen the miracles happen because now look at Houston. Tell me that you know it was underwater.
No, I didn't. Oh, by the way, Chris, so, Robin, you there? Robin, you there? Oh, she's texting me. Oh, wait a minute. I got to open up her mic. I don't know why it keeps on closing. Robin, you there? Robin? Okay. She's texting me, but she might not be near the phone. Oh, wait a minute. Let me... Oh, here we go. Robin here. Robin.
Hi. Hello?
Jack Michael.
Hi.
Hi, Robin.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Can you not hear me? Hello?
Yeah, Chris.
Hi.
You can speak to Robin direct.
Hi, Robin. It's so nice to hear your voice today.
Okay. How is everybody? How are you doing, Chris?
I'm wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes.
Much better now.
Yes.
Yeah,
so sorry for all the confusion. Oh, good. Thank you. Sorry for all the confusion in the chat room. We're working out the new instructions, and so.
It's always a learning process, right? But that's what life is. So we got to learn from what we get given and what we have to give.
Yeah, well, you guys are doing a really great thing.
Right.
And so just let us know anything we can do to help.
Well, I definitely want to say thank you.
Yeah, Chris, Robin is our communicator.
Yeah, that's what I'm learning today. I'm learning about you, Robin. Like I said, I hadn't heard you on the show, but then I heard that you were on the show the other day. I was like, oh, and then I heard your voice today. And I was like, okay, here's, you know, so I haven't heard her talk yet, but I, you know what? It's behind the scenes that make everything work. You know, that's the thing of commerce. People that own the business that make the money. It's the people that go to work and make the business.
Yes. Yes, I'm usually working diligently. Yeah, so I take and I make sure that our shows get out into mainstream media. So we're not only on Blog Talk, but we're on Vimeo, we're on YouTube, we're on Roku, we're on the Play Stores. Yeah, so we've got a network. The network is called I Am Streaming. Yes. And so it's my house is part of the daily lineup. And so
all right. See, you're enlightening me.
Yes.
And I needed that. So I would love to chat with you off the show. Because you mentioned something about Roku TV.
Oh, yeah.
So I would definitely love that. And I'm sure you have my phone number.
I will make sure that I get it from I think I do have it because it showed up on my board. So I'll give you a call after the show.
Wonderful. Yes, thank you. That'd be great. And it's so nice to hear you.
Okay.
So I'm thank you.
One more piece we play every day. I usually play it at the beginning, but I didn't get to it this morning. I'm looking for it now. Let's see. Okay. This is just a 2-minute piece. And let's play this now. Give it a little play.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry, because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer at the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?